Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Today, our window on the world takes us to explore a very famous national park, so stay tuned. Thanks for joining us today. We're glad to have all of you travel with us as we go to a place that's in the middle part of the United States, and we have with us some people to go on the trip with us, some who have been there before. Who has been there?
I've been there before. I'm Linda from Studio Classroom Magazine. It's nice to be here with you.
Where are we going to go?
We're going to go to, actually now it's called Waterton Glacier International Peace Park.
But that's kind of a long name. Can you give me a shorter name?
How about Glacier National Park? Oh,
Glacier National Park. That sounds good. And who else has been there?
Well, I have. And this is Liz. And it's good to be here to share a little bit of what my trip was like going to Glacier National Park.
Well, I would like to go there after reading this article, but I haven't been there. And we have another panelist today.
Yeah, I'm Nathaniel, and I'm with you, Doris. I would love to go there after having read this article, but for today, I guess I'm just here for moral support.
Well, you're here to ask questions.
Yes, and questions.
I can
ask some
questions. We need to find out more about it, don't you think, Nathaniel?
I think so. I think there's probably a lot more to this park that we don't learn from this article, but there's a lot of interesting stuff here, too.
So where are we going to start today?
Well, we're going to start in with the history of the park.
And what page?
We're on page 14 in the
14?
Magazine.
Okay. The article is Explore Glacier National Park. And what does it tell us about it underneath the article? It says we're going to travel going to the Sun Road. Isn't that a strange name, Liz?
Going to the Sun Road doesn't sound like a typical name, like Main Street or whatever road names that we are familiar with. But there is a reason why this road has such a long name, and we'll be finding out more.
Well, I could even guess. It sounds like an Indian name to me, because there's many things that were named by the Indians in the United States, and they would say what they are, going to the Sun Road. So it kind of sounds like an Indian name. Do you think so, Nathaniel?
Yeah, you hear of, you know, people called sleeping with deer and things like that.
Right.
You know, so yeah, there are Indian names very similar to that.
Were we right?
You are right. It was actually named by the Blackfeet tribe that frequented this area, and it was officially named this in 1933. And this road is named after a mountain that's of the same name in the park.
So it's going to be something about nature and mountains and all kinds of interesting things. National parks are really great places. And this one is located in the state of Montana, and it also goes over into Canada, right?
Right. And that's why when I read that long name at the beginning, Waterton Glacier International Peace Park, it is combined with the Canadian Rocky part of it. So it goes over into Canada, and we have that Canadian name with it as well.
Oh, and they always like to put Peace Park on things now so people know they're peaceful and all. But if you look it up in Google and you just Google the Glacier National Park, you get a lot of things to look up.
Right. And actually, the Native Americans that, you know, the Blackfeet tribe that named this also called it, this name means shining mountains, and they call it the backbone of the world.
Hmm. Well, it's going to be interesting. Let's read about it now. There's some beautiful photos here, and we'll talk about things that you might have done when you were there and ask you some personal things about it. So please read out loud with us if you'd like, or listen in as we study today's article. We'll take the very first page, page 14.
In 1918, the plan was to build a road through Glacier National Park's million acres of wilderness in northwestern Montana, so visitors could journey through the heart of Glacier's magnificent scenery by car. Hewing a road through the Rocky Mountains was a colossal undertaking that took more than a decade. Since it was completed in 1932, millions of people have traveled this 50-mile marvel.
Well, in 1918, then, they planned to build this road.
Right, because the park actually, it became America's 10th national park in 1910.
Okay, so I guess it was hard to get around. That's why they decided to put a road there, right?
Right. It was not very accessible at all. Very, very difficult because of the mountains.
It's a big park. It's how many acres? Million.
It's a million acres, right.
It's pretty big.
And it's only part of the Rocky Mountains. Hmm. You know, it's only a part of it. So the Rocky Mountains take up the rest of that ridge. It's huge.
Well, it tells us why they decided to build this road. They wanted you to be able to journey through the very heart, the center of this magnificent, beautiful place by driving your car. And I think that's a great idea. I'm glad they did. Aren't you, Liz?
Right, because if you're going to have a park, you need to make sure people have some way to get there. And back then, I don't think flying was really much of an option.
No.
Well, you can't land there anyway. It's too
steep.
That's
true.
Right. So they had to make a road. It says hewing a road, that it's very difficult to hew a road.
Right. Hewing a road would be a lot like cutting a road. And when we talk about cutting rock, we might often use this word hewing. So really just think about cutting a road when you read that sentence, cutting a road through the Rocky Mountains.
Right. And it was a big, we could say colossal. There's a lot of other words we could say.
Huge, right.
Tremendously difficult.
Mm-hmm. But I think this is a very descriptive road. When we use the word colossal, we think of, you know, really, really, really big.
That's true. A big job or a big undertaking. Mm-hmm. Undertaking is just something you take up your mind, you're going to do this. So it was a big job they took on. And how long did it take then?
Well, it took them more than a decade to complete this road, as we see there. And then since it was completed in 1932, millions of people have traveled this 50-mile marvel.
Right. I think it's actually about 52 miles, but, you know, maybe the beginning and the end. It's around 52 miles, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So have you traveled that road, Liz?
Yes, I have. I've
the
actually driven.
Yes. You've driven the whole road?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, does it take a long time?
Well, considering the fact that the scenery really is magnificent, you kind of lost track of time. You just want to stop every time you see this magnificent view, and you want to stop and take a picture or just slow down so you can really enjoy the view. And so I wasn't really on some race.
Mm-hmm. Well, it would be nice to drive through there. However, if you're going to get to Montana from San Francisco or the West Coast, it's a long drive because Montana is kind of in the middle there, and it's a very long trip from the West Coast or the East Coast to get to Montana.
It is, well, especially from the East Coast.
You probably have to rent a car or something if you want to drive, right?
Yes. Or you can fly into Kalispell, Montana, which is nearby, mm-hmm. and you can rent a car there. A lot of people do that.
Mm-hmm. That's probably a good idea.
But mm-hmm. when we were living in the state, actually, I've driven that road two or three times.
Really?
And if you don't stop, as Liz said, you know, you always stop and take photos because of the, you know, the view.
Wildlife.
Right, and everything. It's a 2 mile. It takes 2 hours to drive through it.
Oh, that's not too bad.
The average speed limit is 40 miles an hour, which is pretty slow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it says here that, you know, there's a lot of beautiful things to see all over the world, but this is one of them. This is what the author's friend said about the Sun Road. And I think everybody that's been there will say that this is a very spectacular, colossal road, wouldn't they?
Yes.
So we read then the next section. Go over to page 15.
Road ready. There are a lot of beautiful things to see in the world, and this is one of them, commented my friend about the Sun Road. Although it's possible to drive the entire stretch in 2 hours, the road is more than just a means to an end, so I plan to make several trips along the road over a few days. There are hundreds of reasons to stop, look, pull over, and get out of the car. Glacier Park is home to 60 species of mammals, over 200 species of birds, more than 730 miles of maintained trails, about 25 glaciers, and countless magnificent views of rugged peaks, sweeping valleys, plunging waterfalls, and cliff-hanging vistas, with 3,000-foot drop-offs.
All right. So before, we were just discussing how if you're not making any stops, it would take about 2 hours to go from one end of the road to the other end. And this is what we see here in the opening sentence of this paragraph. It is possible to drive the entire stretch in 2 hours. And Linda, you had commented on how there is a speed limit, 40 miles, you say?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And listeners, this is not the kind of road where even if you think you want to drive fast and you'll be able to drive fast, there's just no way you would it's just too scary to drive too fast.
Right. And also, if you actually are going to go here, you can go on their website every day. They tell you which part of the road is closed.
Mm-hmm. Really, it's closed sometimes.
Right. It's mm-hmm. the park. Actually, this road is only open from the middle of June until the middle of October. And
well, it's September, so you still got time.
Right. But just so you know, on September 22nd, it's the last day to go all 50 miles because sections of it will be closed after that. And on the 23rd, they're closed. There's a section closed for road repair. So if it's not snow, we've been on this road in July, and it's been snow.
In July.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and so, but also because of the heavy snow on these kind of roads, there is a lot of road repair.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, it says here that this road is more than just a way to get there. It says mm-hmm. a means to an end. It's not like, oh, I want to go to see the other end of this road, so I'm going to hurry and get there. That would be a means to an end.
Mm-hmm.
How do I get there? Drive this road. Mm-hmm. It's more than that, isn't it?
Right, definitely far more than that, because all along the way, just you will find so many reasons to stop. Or at least to slow down.
Well, it says there's hundreds of reasons to stop, right?
And this has been declared a World Heritage Site, which means that it is an area that they want to protect.
So usually you stop, you know, to take pictures, and you could pull over, and you get out of the car and so forth. Now, would you feel that you wanted to stop and see the animals, probably? I would.
I'm sure, yeah, if I noticed animals that were outside along the road. As long as I felt safe, I think I probably would stop, try to snap a picture or something like that, yeah, for sure.
Well, the goats and things in the pictures don't look too bad. But I guess there's grizzly bears, too, right?
Yes.
There are a lot. Lots mm-hmm. of grizzly bears.
Yes.
Well, it says it's a home to 60 different species of mammals. So, my, that's a lot. That would be squirrels and what else?
Rabbits.
Oh, that's a lot of
wildcats. Different kinds of bears.
Yeah, they have lynx, I think, there.
Mm-hmm.
And they not only the grizzly bear, they have black bears, and brown bears there as well. Mm-hmm. But the grizzly is considered the most dangerous bear.
Well, yeah, there would be, I guess. They're kind of big.
Yes.
Right. Well, and then there's 200 or so, at least, species of birds.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know there'd be that many kinds of birds. I love it down in Australia because they have so many birds, every color, all kinds. I didn't think they had all those birds up there in this Glacier National Park, 200 species.
Well, I think some of them might be migrating over this area as well, so they stop in the park.
Mm-hmm. It's possible. Right.
Well, it'd be interesting just to check on, you know, if you're a bird watcher and bird lover, that would be fun, wouldn't it? And then they also have trails and things, don't they?
Right. It says here they have 730 miles of maintained trails. This means that they keep the trails in good condition for you to go hiking. So there's a lot of hiking available in Glacier Park. If you go to Glacier, you should definitely hike into it.
Mm.
And there are a lot of waterfalls in the interior on some of the trails to see. But you do have to be aware that it is a wilderness area. So you might encounter a bear.
Well, that's something.
And they have signs.
But if you have your car and you're driving along this road, you can't just stop beside the road and then leave your car and go on a trail, can you?
But there are places for you to do this.
Okay. Because otherwise, what are you going to do, you know, park alongside the road and go on the trail?
Well, they have a lot of pull-offs where you can park for hiking.
There's a question over here.
Yeah, now, 730 miles of trail, that just sounds like too much trail to choose from. How do you choose from your experience?
Pictures and lists of trails?
Well, I remember when I was there, I looked at the map, and they'll introduce a couple trails, and for every trail, they'll let you know how long it is, you know, the distance, and they'll tell you roughly how much time will you need to complete the hike.
Mm.
So then you can kind of figure out your
helpful day,
like I have the whole entire morning or have the whole afternoon or whole day, and then you decide from that.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
And there's camping besides the hotels you could stay at here. It's quite, I mean, I would when we think of developed, but it's developed for this area. There are a lot of campsites, so you can go camping and also go hiking out of your campsite too.
So if you have a car, you could drive up and leave it there
right.
at the campsite.
Mm-hmm, right.
Then. That sounds good. And they have a lot of glaciers. So you said there's snow. There must be ice and things. Mm-hmm. There are about 25 different glaciers. That's a lot.
Yes, that's amazing. That's why it's called Glacier National Park.
Mm-hmm. And that's true, right? And they have a lot of views of all of these peaks of the mountains. They call them the rugged peaks, just sticking up like that.
Mm-hmm. Right. They're rugged because they're not round, smooth, dome-shaped. They're pointy,
they're
rough
hills,
looking.
They're really mountains.
Right.
Mountains.
When something's really rough looking, pointy looking, we will describe them as rugged peaks.
Hmm. And they have these sweeping valleys. When I think of sweeping valleys, I always think of places like Switzerland because they have the Alps, and then they mm-hmm. have these big, long valleys. In Norway, they have the same thing. Well, it must be that same idea. Here's these big mountains and these big, long areas of valleys.
As far as the eye could see.
Yes, it is just like that.
Except there's probably nobody living in the valleys down there.
Well, it's a national park.
Yeah.
So, no.
And they call it plunging waterfalls. I thought waterfalls were always plunging.
I think she probably used this word to describe that how high they mm-hmm. are and
right.
how far mm-hmm. they fall down.
Right.
Mm. What about the cliff-hanging vistas? What about those?
That's a very good description. Vistas, basically places where you get a good view. Just vista comes from, it's a Latin root word, but when something is cliff-hanging, okay, we know what a cliff is, that edge high up there, and then when hanging, that means you're really up there. And just imagine being able to get a view from way up there.
Well, look what it says right after that, a 3,000-foot drop-off.
It still reminds
so
me of Norway. Have you ever been over there?
I've been in Switzerland, in the Alps in
yeah,
Switzerland.
Yeah, in the Alps. The same kind of thing, you
yes.
know, way up in the mountains.
Yes.
And then you go walk in these little rocks and you look way down there.
Right, which is another reason why when you're driving on this road, you will be parts of the road, you will find yourself, it just feels like you're right at the edge.
You are right
and
at the edge.
And then you have that 3,000-foot drop. And so that will definitely force anybody to slow down.
Don't drink when you're driving, for sure.
Please don't.
No,
right?
No.
Well, that would be really scary. Well, it's kind of like some of these cliff roads that they have different places.
Right. Right.
Okay, well, let's read the last section today. We're doing three sections of our reading. So the last column on page 15.
The park's only road through its mountainous interior crosses the Continental Divide, a natural boundary line separating waters that flow into the Atlantic Ocean from those that flow into the Pacific Ocean, and is easily accessible. The Sun Road's two starting points are both anchored by lakes. The eastern entrance begins at the 10-mile-long St. Mary Lake, while the western end is marked by Lake McDonald, also 10 miles long, and the largest of the park's 200 lakes. I started my drive on the west side, so before getting on the road, I stopped at the Apgar Village's visitor center to get a few pointers on navigating the road ahead.
Well, it talks about crossing the Continental Divide. Now, I'm going to ask Nathaniel a question. He hasn't been there, but Nathaniel, I think you know what the Continental Divide is, don't you?
I do, and we also have a nice little explanation here, too, as well. It says it's a natural boundary line, so it's not anything man-made, that separates the water that flows into the Atlantic Ocean and those that flow into the Pacific Ocean. So just a natural, maybe a rock line that's going to separate that water.
Okay. So it's only a road that goes through this area. That would be pretty interesting. And it talks about the Sun Road's two starting points are both anchored by lakes. That kind of makes a nice picture. On either end, there's a lake holding the road down.
Right.
It's not really anchoring it, but it looks like it's something. At the beginning
right.
and the end, there's a lake. Now, have you been to the lakes, too?
Yes, the lakes are awesome. They're definitely worth seeing. It's worth the trip. And we see here the eastern entrance begins at the 10-mile-long St. Mary Lake. And way on the other end, at the western end, we have Lake McDonald anchoring that point.
Well, the St. Mary Lake, it says here, is 10 miles long, and it's also 472 feet deep, which is very, very deep.
They're fishing?
Yes. But I think you must have to have a special license to go fishing
In
national parks. Mm. Usually you
I would
do.
Think so.
But you can fish. I'm pretty sure you can fish here.
So there must be fish in those lakes.
Yes. Oh, yes.
So that
probably
deep.
Trout and
bass?
Walleye and bass, things mm-hmm. like that.
Mm.
Freshwater, these freshwater fish.
Well.
And it also, I was reading about this lake, and it said that this lake was actually carved out by a 2,200-foot thick glacier.
Hmm.
That's what it. That's how big the glacier was that carved these lakes out.
Think of that. That's why they call it Glacier Park.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and so did you? Which lake did you like the best?
I enjoyed my visit at Lake McDonald. It's not my most favorite lake, but definitely of the two lakes, if I were to choose between St. Mary or Lake McDonald, I would choose Lake McDonald.
Why?
I guess for various personal reasons. Plus, I had a friend who was working there.
Oh, okay, well,
that'd be a good reason.
Yes.
Did you like both lakes just as well?
I like both lakes, too. I mean, the whole trip is, it's awe-inspiring because you're just surrounded by this natural beauty, and it's very hard to take in.
Mm. True.
Boy, just think what we missed out by not going there, Nathaniel.
I know.
We're going to have to do that, huh? Soon,
yeah, sounds
right?
good.
Well, it says that she started her drive on the west side, so before getting on the road, she stopped at this village, Apgar Village Visitor Center. Now, that's always good to stop at a visitor center. Mm-hmm. What can you find out by stopping at the visitor center?
Well, you can. Usually they provide a lot of information. They have handouts or brochures that you can get. Probably they'll tell you which trails to take to see what, how, the kind of campgrounds you can camp in. Although for most national parks, if you're going to go camping, you can't just drive in and camp. You have to book them online ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's also for your safety.
Right.
Yes.
And usually, oftentimes in wild places like this, sometimes they ask you to register.
Mm-hmm.
If you book online, you're automatically registered so they can keep track of you.
That's
because
good.
You don't
That's
know
good
what's going to happen.
In case you happen to meet a grizzly bear.
Right.
And yes, and there are a lot of people. Park rangers are here. So in a lot of the campsites, actually, in the evenings, they have rangers come and give talks about the area, like nature talks. Mm-hmm. And often visitor centers have special programs for kids.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of things.
Right.
It sounds like a place that you'd never forget if you took your family there.
Well, if you really want to make the most of your trip, why not just get as much information as you can?
Mm-hmm.
Now, are there really actual little villages along this road as you go down, or are they mostly camping sites like you've mentioned before?
Right, it says Apgar Village visitors. Are there more?
There's
more
supposed
villages?
To be. I think that there's a village here and there's a village at the other end.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And they, according to the information I have, we were staying with friends outside of Glacier, so we didn't stay in Glacier, but we visited some of the campsites. And the campsites, you know, they provide hot running water and electrical hookups because people also take their RVs,
mm-hmm.
you
yes.
know, recreational
yes.
vehicles. Mm-hmm. A lot of people go tent camping, though, in these areas.
Hmm. Right. But because the whole point is for people to be able to enjoy nature, mm-hmm. we want to be careful that we don't bring in too much commercial stuff
right.
into
That's
the
true.
Park.
Yeah.
So it's not like you have all these fancy
You don't
tourist
have
shops
you don't have
all
McDonald's
along the way.
Along the way
no McDonald's, no 7-Eleven.
And there are no gas stations on this road.
That's right. That's right.
Then,
yeah.
So you better fill up your tank before you get there.
Mm-hmm. So I think the hotel, Nathaniel was asking about hotels. They are usually along the edges of the park,
mm-hmm.
you know, like in the towns along there, because this is not the only road in the park.
What if they run out of gas?
Well, they are dumb.
Call the ranger, get on his horse and bring him some, huh? Who knows?
You have to be careful because you're also, the weather changes so frequently, you know.
You have to be prepared.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, it says what you need to know. That was one thing you might need to know. What else do you think you might need to know? Would you like to read that?
Sure. Let's read that at the top of the page. When it comes to steering a car on this National Historic Civil Engineering Landmark, it helps to know that the west entrance first passes through a flat, forested area, but at the higher elevations, it hugs the mountains until it peaks at 6,640 feet at Logan Pass, where it crosses the Continental Divide. In a section near this summit, the road is carved directly into nearly vertical cliffs for 3 miles. At some places, the road is such a tight fit that vehicles need to be less than 10 feet tall in order to clear the rock overhangs. After reaching the summit, it's all downhill to the east entrance.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you find that pretty exciting driving up there?
Nerve-wracking, actually.
Yes.
If you are claustrophobic, if you have this fear of tight space in some of those areas, it is
and heights.
And height. Fear
which
height
side
and fear
do you, which side do you recommend space. Going in the east or the other one?
I went from the west side.
Actually, I went from both sides. One time we went in from the east side and one time from the west side.
Well, it sounds like that would be a good way to start out, not so high, and then work up to it.
You know, when you come in from the east side, you're coming off, well, you enter the Rocky Mountains before that, but you're coming off the flat plains of Montana. So you can see it for, you know, a couple of hundred miles before you actually get there.
Hmm. Well, thank you for the pointers that you gave us. You can always get a few pointers from your friends. And if you plan to go there, you can just send an email to Studio Classroom, and I'm sure Liz and Linda would love to give you some more pointers, because pointers are very useful. They're like tips, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Right. And actually, I would say that anybody going there should check out TripAdvisor. You know, it's a website that people have gone.
TripAdvisor.com.
Right. And like when I travel, I always try to go see what people have said about accommodations, about what there is to do, things to look out for.
Okay, that's good. That's a good tip right there. It's a good pointer. We're going to have more tomorrow. This is just the beginning, the introduction, this article on exploring Glacier National Park. So please come back tomorrow. Will you be able to come again tomorrow?
Yes, okay. I will.
We'll see you then. And have a good day today planning your trip. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye. Bye-bye.